All right.
I like to be trapped in here with a box of Max L's.
Yeah? After a while, it becomes deadening. Most of the new stuff has come out on CD.
Yeah.
One, two, one, two, one, two. Okay, there we go. One, two. Test one, two. Oh, terrific.
I wouldn't mind taking a bit of an angle on how what students can do.
Absolutely, that'd be terrific if you could say something on that. That'd be ideal.
I understand apathy runs rampant here at UBC, but
yeah, it does. That's probably the big hallmark of the institution is apathy. It's the one thing we do better than anything else. Okay, just get you in. That's about perfect right there.
Okay.
And we'll just talk, and we got a tape running in the other room, and this will get edited if need be, although I don't think we'll do much serious editing on it. We'll just run it like a conversation, and it'll get broadcast, I imagine, tomorrow on our program, and then maybe a couple other times over Christmas, because it's exams right at the moment, so we're not generating as much new material as we might otherwise.
I know what happens.
Yeah. All right, do you have a card or some way that I could introduce you? I mean, what would be a correct way of describing your sort of relation with the organization? Or you're a president of an organization? Or
oh, I used to be, once upon a time.
Yeah?
I was an engineering student up until about a year and a half ago.
Yeah?
I was involved with the Ontario Provincial Federation of Engineering Students.
Right.
And we were very closely involved with the Quebec Federation of Engineering Students, COFEC. And after what happened at Polytechnique, we were all very shocked because we were mostly friends, the students in Quebec and the students in Ontario. And I knew a lot of people from Polytechnique, and it really hit home pretty hard. One of those people was Heidi Rathjen, who's the current executive director of the coalition.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just never dropped the ball. She started getting active right after what happened. When she graduated, she went to work for Bell Canada in sort of a fast-track management program.
Yeah.
And she quit.
Oh, really?
To go work for the coalition full-time, making bugger all money.
Yeah.
And a couple months ago, after what happened at Concordia, I saw her name in the newspaper, and if she needed help, then there was just no way I couldn't give it to her.
Yeah. And so your involvement now is what? I mean, are you still working? You're still working your job. I called you there the other day.
Yeah. No, I'm employed, busy as hell. But I help Heidi out here. There's also mm-hmm. another group of people. I'm trying to get involved more on the student side because I'm a bit younger. I can relate to them. And I've worked in student politics before, so I know how it goes.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's great. That gives me a bit of background to work with. And let's just start talking generally and then sort of move on into the student specifics. If we like, perhaps a good place to begin would be to talk about the gun control legislation, which the government brought down earlier in the year.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess basically, your reaction to that is it effective? Has it done anything? There's been critics on both sides have said that it's ineffective and it doesn't really do very much. How do you see it?
It's a good start. You're never going to get exactly what you want first time around.
Yeah.
The most important thing to come out of the legislation is implementation. It's got to be used. The police have to take their powers of search and seizure and take guns away from people who shouldn't have them. Seize guns from people in domestic violence situations. Just take the measures of the act and enforce them. And the weapons that have become illegal, some of the assault-style weapons, though not all of them.
Well, I noticed the AK-47, for instance, is still not totally banned. You can still own one.
We've got to get them out of circulation. Yeah. Those weapons were designed to kill people, nothing else, and they should be taken away.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate that the government's not able to offer compensation out of the amnesty, but the good of society's got to prevail sometimes.
Yeah. Is there, you say that you don't know that you'll ever get something which is a happy compromise, which will make everybody happy, and obviously there's a vocal gun lobby in Canada, and as there is in the States too, but there are also sort of people on all sides now, I guess, increasingly calling for stricter controls on guns. Do you ever see a day when we're going to be able to get the two somehow to see each other's way? Is there going to be some way that you can think of where you can allow the gun lobby to have their way and make sort of
parts control of the gun lobby?
Yeah.
Hunters aren't so bad. Hunters who don't mind locking up their rifles. Safe containment of firearms is extremely important, and it's a bit of a hassle, but if it saves a life, it's worth it. That's what hunters complain about most. I spend a lot of time in northern BC and in Alberta, and hunters just don't want to be bothered with the controls on safe containment of their weapons.
Yeah.
They're generally pretty safe shooters. Although having a weapon in the house doesn't help in a domestic violence situation.
Yeah.
But it's the people who enjoy the assault weapons and the people who belong to those kind of groups want to keep those types of weapons in circulation. People see them as exotic.
Mm-hmm.
I can't understand that. But some people see people killing weapons as being exotic and being things to collect, and they're not.
Yeah. There's a definition in the new legislation for the genuine collector, I think is the phrase which is used. And there's been some talk about how that's the definition of that term is a little bit blurry around the edge. And some of the people who are calling themselves genuine collectors are collectors of these assault style weapons. And that's still sort of open for it's been open for a lot of criticism that I've heard.
I don't think there's any good reason to collect those kind of weapons.
Yeah.
I don't think that anybody could give me one besides the idea that they were exotic.
Yeah.
And having an exotic man-killing piece of equipment is not a legitimate good reason to have a man-killing piece of equipment.
Yeah.
Ultimately, the goal is to keep them out of the hands of people who aren't collectors, and people who would use them maliciously.
Interesting that you bring up Northern BC, because I was speaking to somebody a short time ago on a totally unrelated topic, and we got around to speaking about guns and some aspects of this. And their reaction was, people living in places like Vancouver and Toronto have no idea what the attitude is towards guns and how freely they're used. And he said, it's a joke. If somebody came into I think it was Fort Nelson, where he was from, and he said, if somebody came in and told us that everybody's gun had to be locked up behind a little silver case and you had to have a piece of paper for every gun, it's just light years away from the reality up there. What are we going to do about that? Is that a reality that you recognize? You say you've been up there.
I can understand that. And those guys need guns. Those guys need go fishing.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to have a gun for protection from bears.
Yeah. You got a grizzly chasing you. You want to have a gun.
You can't say that's not legitimate.
Yeah.
But at the same time, having the gun in the house makes it more likely that it's going to be used in a domestic violence situation. There's a problem there, because it is something that's necessary,
yeah.
But they also must be contained. You've got to safe store them. And is it right that anybody can go in and buy ammunition for them? You know, controls on the sale of ammunition is something we've been pulling for all along. Anybody can go buy bullets without an FAC or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, it's the bullets that get shot out of the gun that do the killing.
Yeah. In addition to the legislation that's been in place, there's been suggestion I've heard from some sides that rather than just restricting the guns who's using it, we put in more complex procedures for actually owning a gun and having people need to be re-registered and retrained on a basis in the same way as, say, lifeguards are at the moment.
Yeah.
And is that an angle to take? Do you think
it's obvious. You can go get a firearms acquisition certificate. The
mm-hmm.
fellow, I can't recall his name, at Concordia, legally owned those handguns.
Yeah, Fabricant.
Yeah. He legally owned those weapons.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have been hard for Mark Lapine to legally own that weapon he had. That's my understanding, he bought it in the States, but he could have required it in Canada with an FAC, and he wasn't suitable to be carrying a gun.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of people out there who can get a hold of a weapon, who really aren't the kind of people that society wants to have weapons in their hands.
Yeah. There's a whole issue here with violence against women,
mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons we're talking. And just having the firearms around is often seen as a problem. There's some horrifying statistics, like half of the domestic disputes that end up in somebody being
half
killed
of women
is
killed by their husbands or shot.
Yeah,
typically with hunting weapons, and those are typically legally owned.
So what do you do about that?
And I mean, they're not registered. So if a policeman is called to a house for a domestic dispute, he doesn't know if there's a rifle in that house. And if he knew there was a rifle in that house and there was a violent situation going on, under the new law, he has the power to seize that weapon. However, he doesn't know it's there, because firearms in Canada aren't registered. If that policeman knows who has the guns and where they are, he can take action on that. and perhaps prevent a murder.
At the same time, if they're called to a situation where the shooting has already taken place, I mean, there's a situation where the gun has already been used in the house, mm-hmm. and then the police are called. There's not
exactly.
a great deal they can do
about
that.
Get the gun out of the house in the first place. I mean, that's ideal.
Yeah, but you still have the question of the guns in the house. You get a domestic dispute. Whatever's handy, it gets used. If there's not a firearm there, one assumes
15 times more likely to have a death from a firearm than you are from a knife, club, fist, frying pan, whatever.
Yeah. So
guns are lethal.
So do we not have guns? I mean, how do you? It comes back to the old question: what do you do if the guy has the thing registered and it's in his house and he's been through some sort of training thing and it's even if it's locked upstairs in the cabinet somewhere, mm-hmm. he still has. I mean, there's still a gun in the house and you can still walk upstairs, unlock that thing, and walk downstairs and bang.
Well, there's the provision for seizure. If his wife were to go to the court or the police and say, "I feel I'm in a violent situation with my husband. He has a weapon in the house. Let's do something about it." The police could take action on that. But they've got to implement those measures in the new law. However, the police at the moment don't know. They can't say, "Oh yeah, he's got a gun in the house. It's this kind of gun." They have to rely on his wife's testimony.
What about the question of registering these guns? I mean, how do we get the guy who currently doesn't really give and has got a gun, and he acquired it legally, he probably had an FAC at the time, but there's no, his local police department, the local RCMP, doesn't know that he's got a gun in
the house. They still won't under the new legislation. There isn't the provision for registration. There's provision to get rid of illegal guns that are in circulation now,
okay. And
guns that will become illegal, mm-hmm. but there still isn't the provision for registration of every weapon.
To bring it back a little closer to home, we're talking in generalities here, but for somebody who's like myself, who's a university student in Vancouver, where does gun control, where does it affect me? Do you see? I know you've been involved with sort of on the student front of gun control.
I think on December 6th, 3 years ago, we all became involved. I don't think that students can stand back from the issue. I think it's become an issue that has directly touched students. And again at Concordia, and I think it's an issue that students have got to get behind. There are a lot of other issues that arose out of what happened 3 years ago that also need to be dealt with, but I think part of it is to deal with guns. It's something that students have to use their voice for. Students are the only really cohesive group of young people in this country who can get together and stand together and have a voice. If the young people in this country want to be heard, it's got to come from the students. The people who you're dealing with in legislative bodies and in the gun lobby are middle-aged type people. And if the young people in this country want to be heard, the students have got to do it. I won't go so far as to say students have a moral responsibility to get up and be heard about the issue.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a bit of a weight on your shoulders.
Does it mean that students have to? I mean, sign petitions and all these sorts of things. I mean, where's the most effective voice?
Students have been fantastic. After what happened at Polytechnic, the petition that was circulated by students, engineering students in particular, pulled over 500,000 signatures. I mean, that's one in every 50 people in Canada. I mean, that's outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of money that was raised for the Polytechnic Memorial Fund was again outstanding. Now the Concordia petition's going around, and it's mm-hmm. been specifically channeled through the schools. I encourage students to get a hold of that petition.
There have been a number of copies around here. The student union here has a number of copies.
Yeah. That's a way to do it. Talk to your MP. The gun lobby gets heard because they speak loud. Students can speak loud too. And the students, I hope that students will speak up and say that guns are not something that they want in the society they want to live in when they get out of school.
Yeah. Now you're saying that we should speak up and speak loud because the gun lobby is doing the same. There's still always going to be for the legislator sitting in Ottawa, for the MP who's got two members of his constituency, students on one hand saying control these things, and somebody else saying, but I want to collect them.
Mm-hmm.
There's always going to be that dichotomy there. Is there something more that we have to be doing here? I mean, do we have to shout louder? Do we have to take a different tack? Do we have to be...
If the most important things for students to do is stand together.
Yeah.
You guys have a lot more votes. Just about every university student in British Columbia, and college student in British Columbia, I bet you can vote.
Mm-hmm. I don't know very many do.
Well, I'd hope they do. Yeah. That was something that we always saw when I was at school, turnout for elections, and it was all terribly low.
Mm-hmm.
But you're the future. The students are the future. And if the students want a different future than's out there right now is the time to go get it and change it for when you finish school.
Yeah.
I really believe that.
Great. Well, thanks very much for your time this afternoon.
You're welcome, man.
Anything else in there that you really wanted to?
I guess the fellow you had, was his name Daryl Davies?
Daryl Davies. It could be. I have the piece of paper with his name on it. It's written next door.
If he had dealt with that, firearms in violence against women,
mm-hmm.
and if you want to go into that a little bit,
sure, we could.
Because Heidi sent me some outstanding information on that.
Okay.
The big.